Hey there, everybody. You're listening to The Raven's Grove. I'm your host, Dahi, and today we're going to be diving once more into the world of music. More specifically, we're going to be talking about the history and evolution of an instrument synonymous with music as a whole, and especially in the 20th century, the electric guitar. So, let's get started. Now, guitars are an instrument. They've been around for centuries, and they can trace their origins back to the lute and the oud in medieval and Middle Eastern cultures. By the way, I don't speak Arabic, so if I pronounce that wrong, please, I'm very sorry, I didn't mean to pronounce it wrong. But according to Guitar World magazine, the first, and I'm quoting it directly here, the first fully functioning solid body electric guitar to be manufactured and sold, and the quote, is the Ropat in Electro A25, dubbed the Frying Pan. It was made in 1932 by a company now known as Rickenbacker Guitars. But surprisingly, the Frying Pan wasn't commercially successful. And that, in my opinion, the title of the first successful electric guitar ever made goes to the Gibson ES-150. Now, bit of background here. In the world of electric guitars, there are two main camps. You've got Fender on one side and Gibson on the other. And these both guitar companies historically have made and continue to make absolutely exceptional guitars. But the rivalry between them is intense. If you live in the US, it's similar to Red Sox versus Yankees. If you live in Australia, it's Magpies versus Bombers. Or any other, if you live in the US, or the UK, sorry, it's like Manchester United versus Arsenal. Both of these sides have extremely dedicated fan bases, and the rivalry between them goes back decades. It is a huge deal. Now, for my money, I personally am on the fence. I think both companies make amazing guitars depending on what you need. Generally speaking, I will prefer Gibsons over Fenders, but my first guitar was actually a Fender, and I love it a bit. So I still have it. It's an amazing guitar. So the point is that they're both good for different styles of playing and different styles of music. The point here I'm trying to make is that in 1936, Gibson Guitars released the ES-150. Now, I'm going to get a bit technical here, but bear with me. The ES-150 is a semi-acoustic electrical guitar, which means that it's basically a modified acoustic guitar that had electric pickups added to it. The ES in the name stands for Electric Spanish, referring to the Spanish-style acoustic guitar shape that the ES-150 is based on. The 150 part is actually because Gibson priced the guitar as an instrument amplifier and cable bundle at $150 US in 1936. Now, for reference, in 2024, that is roughly equivalent to $3,330 US dollars, $5,100 Australian, $2,640 British pounds, $4,500 Canadian, $3,090 Euro, 2,360 Jordanian dinars, 104,475 Taiwanese new dollars, 34,800 Norwegian kroner, 56,760 pesos from Mexico, 34,770 Swedish kronor, 12,225 Emirati dirhams, or 62,815 South African rands. So, basically, Gibson had invented the first semi-hollow body electric guitar, but like a bolt of lightning from the blue sky, a seismic shift in guitar building was on the horizon. In 1950, Fender Guitars, which at the time were a very new company, Gibson had been around since the mid-1800s, they were well known and well respected as a maker of acoustic guitars. The ES-150 was a new one, but they had also been making lap steel guitars, which are often used in Hawaiian music. If you're familiar with SpongeBob, you will have heard a lap steel guitar. They're commonly used in that soundtrack. And so electric was used in those, and it was used in the ES-150. But apart from that, no one had made an electric guitar. I mean, like I said, the frying pan that I mentioned earlier, that was a commercial flop. No one had tried up until 1950. Fender Guitars, like I said, very new company. And it released the first ever solid body electric guitar, which they nicknamed the Broadcaster. However, following a legal dispute with Gretsch Instruments in 1951, see, Gretsch already owned the name Broadcaster for their drum kit, Fender renamed and re-released it as the Telecaster. The Telecaster, also known as the Tele 2 guitar players, was the first mass-produced, commercially successful solid-body electric guitar, and, well, it's still popular to this day. I mean, it's got a devoted fan base at the time among rock and roll stars, country guitar players. Pretty much most people who were playing electric guitar in 1951 were playing a Tele. Teles have a single cutaway in the body near the neck, and they typically have two single-coil pickups, but in the modern day, there's tons of different variants of all these different pickup combinations. It depends on, well, really, on your price range and what you're after. But traditionally, the bass Tele has had a single cutaway near the neck, and they've typically got two single-coil pickups, one at the bridge and one at the neck. Now, despite being nearly 75 years old, Teles are still being manufactured to this day, and they're actually very popular with country, pop rock, and classic rock guitarists. Some of the most famous Telecasters and players in history include country singer Keith Urban, pop punk star Avril Lavigne, she plays one, rock icon Jeff Beck from the Yardbirds, he was known for playing a Tele, Keith Richards, world-famous guitarist for the Rolling Stones, he's well-known for playing a Tele, and my personal favorite from this list, legendary blues musician Muddy Waters. In fact, I've talked about my love of the film Crossroads before. There's a line in it where it says, Muddy Waters invented electricity. That's because Muddy Waters was one of the first blues guitarists to use an electric guitar. He popularized it for the entire genre, and because of that, the world owes him a huge debt in terms of blues music. Now, Gibson wasn't going to take this line down. See, this was a blatant challenge to the reputation of the premier guitar makers. Fender was basically saying, Gibson are all fuddy-duddies that are just so hopelessly entrenched in tradition they can't think of anything new. Gibson was not happy about this, and so in 1952, they partnered up with jazz musician Les Paul to release the Gibson Les Paul. Now, initially supplied with P90 pickups, which are almost like a hybrid, I'm going to get to what they were replaced with, but P90s are almost like Gibson's trademark answer to the Fender single coil pickups. They're a little bit chunkier, they've got a slightly different tone. Compared to humbuckers and single coils, P90s are roughly in the middle. Now, in 1957, the P90s on the Les Paul were actually replaced with humbuckers. And the guitar world, well, it was never the same again. Les Pauls from the years 1958, 1959, and 1960 are considered by many to be the finest electric guitars ever made. These are essentially the guitar equivalent of the Holy Grail. You do not get better than this. And this can lead to some truly incredible price tags on them whenever these legendary guitars come up for sale. For example, in 2014, the iconic 59 Les Paul known as Greeny, which has got a very long and storied history that I'm not going into, it was purchased by Kirk Hammett, the lead guitarist for Metallica, for roughly $2 million US. Now, that's in 2014. In 2024, that's roughly equivalent to $2,606,000 US, nearly $4 million Australian, £2,065,000 pounds sterling, just over $3.5 million Canadian, €2,417,000 euro, €1,850,000 Jordanian dinars, €81,726,000 Taiwanese new dollars, €27,383,000 Norwegian kroner, and then you've got €44,420,000 Mexican pesos, €27,181,000 Swedish kroner, sorry, I got a bit lost there, nearly 10 million Emirati dirhams, or nearly 49,200,000 South African rand. That is an amazing amount of money for essentially a nearly 75-year-old electric guitar. But believe me, they're worth it. The sustain, the sound, the feel of these guitars is near mythical in their value and their appreciation in guitar players. They are the pinnacle of guitar playing design. Now, the Les Paul's got devoted fans all over the world, myself among them. I actually own a reasonably cheap Les Paul. And to be honest, it's one of my favorite guitars to play. It's a beautiful guitar. And some of the greatest guitarists who have ever picked up the guitar have used some Les Pauls. Slash from Guns N' Roses, I'll actually talk about him later. Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top, Kirk Hammett from Metallica, as I've already mentioned, Ace Frehley from Kiss, Pete Townsend from The Who, Joe Perry from Aerosmith, and perhaps most iconic of all, the legendary Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin, the guy who famously did Stairway to Heaven, Kashmir, Immigrant Song, Ramble On, name whatever Led Zeppelin song you want. If it's after their first album, he used a 59 Les Paul for it. All of those musicians I just mentioned, and many more, have famously used Les Pauls at some or most of the point in their careers. However, Fender wasn't done yet. Their new model, the Stratocaster, released in 54, and, well, the Strat's one of the most popular guitars in the world for a reason. It was a smash hit with players at the time. It continues to be one of the most popular guitar models in the world. In fact, if you go on, if you've got an iPhone, go on the, type in guitars and look up the emoji for it. That is actually a Stratocaster. That is how popular it is. It's officially the official emoji on Apple products for guitar. Now, a bit of complex stuff here. The Strat has got a double cut design as opposed to a single cut, which is like the Les Paul or the Tele. And instead of the two pickups of the Tele, the Strat's actually got three single coils with a five-way toggle switch. Now, this was revolutionary because it meant that you could really change the tone of your guitar pretty much on the fly. And coupled with the fact that the Strat came with its own self-contained tremolo system, which is otherwise known as a whammy bar, enables you to get some pretty radical effects. This meant that the Strat was directly responsible for the creation of rock and roll music in the 50s, with artists like Chuck Berry, Buddy Holly, many, many others at the time utilizing his guitars. And some of the more famous ones for using a Strat include Eric Clapton. He was famous for using a Strat, still does. Stevie Ray Vaughan, one of the greatest blues rock players of all time, used a Strat. All three guitarists from Iron Maiden, one of the biggest metal bands in the world. So don't, if you want to get a Strat, don't let anyone tell you that a Strat can't make metal. And in my opinion, perhaps the greatest musician to ever use an electric guitar, Hendrix himself. Jimi Hendrix was famous for using a Stratocaster. So yeah, if you choose to play a Strat, you're in good company. Now, the release of the Stratocaster was a devastating blow for Gibson. They were scrambling to catch up. In response, their design team came up with three new guitar designs for release in 1958. The Flying V, the Explorer, and the Futura. Of these, the Flying V and the Explorer became production models, but the Futura never made it past the prototype phase, and we don't have any surviving replicas. We got recreations, sure, and we've got the design patent that they filed with the patent office in the US, but there, as far as we know, no surviving examples of the Futura from that era have actually survived to the modern day. Now, these new designs, they were sharp, they were edgy, they were completely from left field. And to be honest, most of the people at the time didn't know what to make of them. And in 1961, they, along with the Les Paul line, were halted in production to make way for the Gibson Les Paul, the SG. But we're going to get to that later. But by the 1960s and the 70s, many guitarists had started to clamor for Flying Vs, Les Pauls, and Explorers, and Gibson resumed production on those models. Like, if I'm repeating myself here, I may have, but Kirk Hammett from Metallica, he's often used a Flying V, especially on his earlier stuff. And his bandmate, Metallica's frontman, lead singer, and rhythm guitarist, James Hetfield, is well known for using an Explorer. That's like a signature guitar. Dave Mustaine, the former bandmate of Metallica and the current frontman of Megadeth, who are a traditional rival slash enemy band of Metallica, uses a heavily modified Flying V. Blues legend Albert King famously used a Flying V left-handed, as did Hendrix for a time. In fact, Gibson crafted a left-handed Flying V specifically for Hendrix, who used it with his iconic psychedelia pattern that he hand-painted on there from 1966 to 1968. More recently, Zakk Wylde from Black Label Society and the former guitarist for Ozzy Osbourne, he often uses a Flying V with his iconic bullseye pattern on it. As for Explorers, the band U2, their lead guitarist The Edge, is famous for using Explorer with absolutely tons of special effects. Now, my own opinion about The Edge notwithstanding, he is one of the most iconic players of an Explorer in the world. And if, you know how I've often talked about on this podcast about one of my favorite TV shows, Metalocalypse? Well, the two guitarists from that show, Squishcar Squiggoff, the lead guitarist, he plays an Explorer, and Toki Wartooth, the rhythm guitarist, he plays a Flying V. So, yeah, I mean, they are iconic. They really are. To this day, Explorers and Flying Vs are all being produced by the Gibson factory. So, yeah. The other main Gibson models from the late 50s were the ES-335 and the ES-355. Continuations of the Electric Spanish series, these were semi-hollow body, semi-acoustic guitars with two humbucker pickups. Now, these, at the time, were very popular with jazz, blues, and rock and roll guitarists, but they've since developed a large following in other genres. B.B. King, one of the greatest blues musicians of all time, famously dubbed his 335 Lucille. And Dave Grohl, former drummer for Nirvana and the current frontman for the Foo Fighters, prefers an E355, who he actually has his own signature model with Gibson. So that's pretty awesome. Now, remember how Gibson halted production of the Flying V Exploring Les Paul in 61? Well, the new guitar that came out that year was originally dubbed the Les Paul Special, but Les Paul the musician apparently hated this guitar. He really loathed it, and so he ended his sponsorship deal with Gibson so Gibson would take his name off a guitar they hated. Now, Gibson wasn't happy, but they complied with his request, and the Special was redubbed the Gibson SG, with the SG part standing for Solid Guitar. The SG was designed to be far more contoured and far lighter than the original Les Paul, and it was supremely comfortable to play. It features an iconic devil horns design on the cutaway, which basically it's a double cutaway guitar like the Strat. And, well, to be honest, it just looks absolutely incredible. And it became phenomenally popular with blues, rock, punk, and metal guitarists, and is, as of this broadcast, the best-selling Gibson model of guitar of all time. Now, if you're a long-time listener to this podcast, you might be familiar with these two names. Tony Iommi, the guitarist from Black Sabbath, and in my opinion, creator of metal as a genre, and Angus Young, the guitarist and, as of this broadcast, last surviving member of the original lineup of Australian hard rock supergroup AC/DC. Both of these have used SGs almost exclusively in their careers. They are the ones that you think of when you think of an SG. Their tones, their guitar playing technique is all based around an SG. Frank Zappa also famously has used an SG, as has Pete Townshend of The Who. This is why the SG is so common in rock and metal scenes and why it's so popular. The Les Paul may have the history behind it, and it may have the best example of what an electric guitar can possibly be, but the SG is way lighter, it's way easier to play, and it just... I mean, this is difficult for me to say, but in my opinion, the SG just looks cooler. And don't get me wrong, I love the Les Paul. I dearly love the design, I love the way it sounds, I love the way it plays, but the SG just has something about it that just... it's something sinister, and at the same time, incredibly cool. I don't know how else to describe it, but it looks dangerous. You know what I mean? And it just looks absolutely incredible. So yeah, and it sounds the way it does. I mean, do yourself a favor. Look up Guns N' Roses. Listen to one song, whatever song you want. Then listen to Black Sabbath. I would recommend Paranoid or Iron Man. The sound in guitars, completely different. Iron Man is played on an SG. That's the sound I'm talking about. That is why the SG is iconic, in my opinion. It's not better than the Les Paul. Don't get me wrong. They're both great, but they're in different ways. That's what I'm talking about. But basically, Gibson, by the time the SG came out, and even though it had been re-releasing the Flying V and the Explorer and the Les Paul, it was in dire straits. It was in bad, bad way, and it was basically on the verge of bankruptcy. The market for electric guitars by the 1980s was flooded with Super Strats and other guitars built for shredding styles of playing, such as the Dean Star or the BC Rich Warlock. Now, for reference, if you know the show Stranger Things, in Season 4, Eddie Munson's guitar, which he famously uses in The Upside Down, that is a BC Rich Warlock, and they are, well, they're just playing cool. Now, Gibson was looking back on the heyday of the 1950s, and... well, I was trying to capitalize on their reputation, and to be honest, they were not doing a good job of it. Just when all hope for Gibson seemed lost, along came a top hat wearing, nose ring sporting guitarist, simply known as Slash. Now, I mentioned Slash earlier, and for those of you who have never heard of him, he's the lead guitarist of Guns N' Roses, and is considered by many to be among the greatest guitarists in the past 35 to 40 years. Slash is an amazingly talented guitarist. He's not virtuoso-like, such as Steve Vai, but he is certainly one of the best in the business. Now, Guns N' Roses burst onto the public consciousness with their 1987 record, Appetite for Destruction, and there was Slash playing the hits with a Les Paul. Now, the funny thing is, Slash wasn't actually using a genuine Les Paul. He was using a custom-made guitar that I don't know the name of the luthier. I know it was a custom order job that was meant to look and sound as close as it could to a 59 Les Paul. It wasn't a genuine Gibson. And yet, when everyone sees Slash playing those songs, this single-handedly revitalized interest in Gibson and in Les Paul guitars. And by the 1990s, the Super Strat had nearly entirely died out due to a combination of changing taste in music and to losing like to classic models, just as the Les Paul, the SG, the Flying V, the Explorer, the Fender Jaguar, the Fender Mustang, the Tele, and the Strat. Now, the reason I bring this up, it's not just to demonstrate that the Les Paul is still around and still very, very popular. It's also to talk about the Super Strat guitar. Now, the name Super Strat doesn't refer to any one brand. Rather, it refers to any guitar design that resembles a Fender Stratocaster, but with differences that clearly distinguish it from a standard Strat, usually to cater to a different playing style. Some of the differences between a regular Strat and a Super Strat typically include the Super Strat having a more pointed, aggressive-looking body, neck shapes with increased cutaways to facilitate access to higher frets, often an increased number of frets on the fingerboard, a contoured heel at the neck joint and facilitating easier high fret access, the use of humbucking pickups, and locking vibrato and tremolo systems, most commonly the Floyd Rose tremolo system. Now, the Floyd Rose is actually really cool because it normally, when you use a tremolo, you are essentially loosening the tension on the strings. Now, this can make some, like, wave effects, right? And that's what a normal tremolo that Stratocasters came standard with. The problem with a tremolo system like that is that it causes your guitar to go out of tune very quickly. With a Floyd Rose, you don't have that problem because, essentially, it's got nuts and bolts that will lock the guitar strings in place. Now, this means that you cannot change the tuning. You have to literally take the guitar apart to change the tuning on the guitar. But it also means that when you do these incredible dive bombs with the whammy bar, it's not going to go out of tune. Like, if you listen to the song Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue, that part at the start that sounds like a motorbike engine, that is actually played on a Super Strat with a Floyd Rose tremolo. So because of that, Floyd Roses were amazingly popular in the 80s. They still are quite popular in the modern day for metal and shredding guitarists, but they're not as common as they used to be, primarily because they are extremely complicated to install, and they also they rely on a certain style of playing to use. You can't use them to play blues music, for instance. However, in a Super Strat, there's no formal definition of a Super Strat. The categorization as a Super Strat is still largely left to popular opinion and depends greatly on the artist or artists commonly associated with a particular model and how it is marketed. For instance, in my opinion, one of the greatest guitarists of the past 50 years, Steve Vai, he almost exclusively uses the Ibanez GEM, the J-E-M, line of Super Strats, to the point that those guitars are synonymous with Vai's virtuoso playing style. And like I said earlier, Super Strats were ludicrously popular in the 80s when thrash metal, glam metal, and hardcore punk were the main forms of music using electric guitars. But when Slash saved Gibson in, I think it was 1977, the Super Strat lost a great deal of its momentum. Then, when grunge music came onto the scene and nearly killed glam nearly overnight, guitar players wanted guitars like the ones being used by their favorite grunge artists. Now, this is actually kind of funny for me because, well, look at it this way. Kurt Cobain, lead singer and guitarist for Nirvana, right? He used a bunch of different guitars in his career, but the majority of them, vast majority as far as I know, were Fenders. The main reason he actually gave to reporters for using, you know, guitars models like the Fender Jaguar and the Fender Mustang, models that have become closely associated with him and with grunge music as a whole, is apparently that when Nirvana was starting out, they had to scour secondhand shops and pawn shops for old, cheap guitars that were left-handed models. Cobain was a left-handed guitarist, meaning he played the frets with his right hand and strummed the strings with his left. Now, this is actually kind of funny because Cobain was a right-handed bass player, so do with that what you will. Put simply, the reason that the Jaguar and the Mustang were chosen was because they were the only models Nirvana could actually afford. They were not in production anymore, and so because of that, they were dirt cheap. Now, that part always makes me laugh, and the thing is that once Nirvana and grunge as a movement got popular, Fender started producing Jags and Mustangs again, along with replicas of Cobain's custom Jagstang, which is a hybrid of the Jaguar and the Mustang made specifically for Cobain in 93 by the Fender Custom Shop. And all three of those models, Jaguars, Mustangs, and the Jagstang, are still made by Fender to this day. They're not as popular as, say, the Stradivari, but they are certainly up there. Nowadays, the electric guitar world, it's got hundreds, if not thousands, of different brands and models to choose from. So if you're listening to this and you want to start playing electric guitar and you don't know where to start, here's some piece of advice for you. I got these advice when I started playing guitar. I'm passing it on. First off, become really good mates with your local guitar and music shop. This is actually really important because most, if not nearly all, guitars and music shops will actually let you try out the guitars as long as you take care of them in the shop. Now, this is actually important because you got to take care of these guitars. You haven't bought them yet. They are letting you play them as a favor. You've got to take care of them. You don't put them down on the ground. You don't leave them leaning against the wall. You take care of these guitars. You take extremely good care of them, and they will actually respect you for it. Secondly, listen to your gut when it comes to a good guitar. When you're playing it, you have to factor in how it feels to play, how it sounds, the weight, the balance, everything. If it doesn't feel right to you on an instinctual level, for any reason, this is not the right guitar model for you. Thirdly, and this is very important, do your research. Depending on what kind of music you want to play, your ideal guitar choice can vary wildly. Now, for this part, if you listen to rock, punk, or metal music, look at what guitars are used on your favorite songs. Now, this part is really important. Pay careful attention to the pickups and how they're configured. Because if you want to get, say, if you listen to Iron Maiden, you'll want to get a Stratocaster. If you listen to, say, Nirvana, you might want to get a Jaguar. If you listen to, say, Led Zeppelin, you might want to get a Les Paul. If you listen to Black Sabbath, you might want to get an SG. It all depends on the style of guitar and the style of pickups. That is ever present. Fourthly, shop around, shop within a budget, and remember, there's no shame in only getting what you can afford. A typical Gibson Les Paul, like a genuine Gibson in 2024, will set you back anywhere between $1,000 and $10,000 US, depending on the model released. Now, that's way out most beginners' price range, but a halfway decent amp and a good pedal setup can help make a cheap guitar sound truly epic. Like I said, shop around. Gear that is second hand is often your best friend, but always remember to try before you buy, because you can get burned very, very easily if it's bad gear. And finally, never buy online if you can buy in person. If you can go and try a guitar and you know it's the right one for you, that is the best option. Do not buy online if you don't personally know that guitar. Anyway, that's all for today, folks. Thanks for listening to Ravensgrove. I've been Dahi. You've been awesome. I'll talk to you in the next episode. See ya.